This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 6, Episode 16 of Commentary. Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike, and John is, we had a bit of a scheduling conflict this week, and, you know, he's stuck at work now and everything like that, and Max is still marooned wherever he is, and hopefully he'll be back in the not-too-distant future. So, you know, it was like, well, do we just skip a week? Do we? Well, we've never skipped a week. We have never once skipped a week for 146 weeks, so we're not skipping a week. And luckily, Marcelo stepped in, and he's going to join me to talk about Jerry Goldsmith's Oscar-winning score for The Omen. Marcelo, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it just so happens I had some free time today, and yeah, I'm glad to talk about The Omen.
Yeah, now we had you on this show for a couple episodes way, way long ago, like over 2 years ago, to talk about some Nicholas Meyer stuff. But since then, you've started up your own podcast, the Talk Film Society. You want to just give people an idea of what that is?
Oh yeah, well, it branches off from the Twitter account, which the Twitter account, the Talk Film Society Twitter account, started off as just I figured, you know, they have the Oscars and whatever awards show, so I figured why not have an award show on Twitter where people on Twitter decide, and then the podcast came from that idea where let's just have voices on Twitter, members of the Talk Film Society, come on the podcast and talk about film. So yeah, that's where it stems. And yeah, we are, I think at this point, wrapping up season two. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. TalkFilmSociety.com is where you can find the episodes.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because, like, you would listening to it, you would never think that this came from, like, an awards-based thing, because the conversations that occur on the Talk Film Society are, like, some of the most, you know, literate and philosophical and analytical conversations about film that are going on right now. So definitely, if you're a fan of movies, check out the Talk Film Society.
Well, yeah, thanks. Yeah, and yeah, I just wanted to, like, because you've been on the show and a lot of great other film people have been on the show, and it's just been a pleasure to have, yeah, varying voices and interesting discussion. I love doing it.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about The Omen, which was directed by Richard Donner, and it came out in 1976, and Jerry Goldsmith did the music for it. It's kind of surprising to me that, A, Jerry Goldsmith only won one Oscar, and B, that it was for this movie, that a movie like this could actually win an Oscar. But that's how good his score is, at least in my opinion. But before we get into the score itself, what are your thoughts on The Omen?
Having just rewatched it this morning, I'm reminded that this is a terrific film. I think I first saw this back in high school. I think AMC had a marathon of all the Omen films. I remember very distinctly watching the first Omen on TV and being, you know, pretty much blown away. But then I didn't see it for like another 10 years. I saw it again about a year ago. And yeah, still, it is both terrifying in a way that not normal, in a way that horror films aren't, what am I trying to say? It's not structured like a straight off horror film, but it's still terrifying in ways. Especially those, the standout element, I think, are the kills, which is still shocking to me. Some of the way some of these people in this movie are taken out, still pretty shocking. But yeah, I think it stands as like a solid thriller with horror elements and very well made by Donner. And yeah, the music is iconic, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I guess before we get too far into it, we should kind of give people an idea of what this movie is or what it's about. The Omen, it's a horror movie starring Gregory Peck, and it's about a guy. He's the ambassador. He's the American ambassador to the UK, I guess. And his wife has a baby who dies in childbirth. And he is quickly whisked off to like a church or something, a seminary or something like that, where a priest says, "Hey, this child right here was just born and his mom died in childbirth. So what you can do is you can take this kid and, you know, your wife will never have to know that it's not her kid and you can raise him as your own. And, you know, this is it's meant to be." So he does that. And then, over the first couple of years, he kind of realizes that this kid is the son of the devil. And hijinks ensue. So that's The Omen. For me, like, I had never seen this movie up until this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I was like, I always knew that I needed to see it because, you know, Richard Donner is a great director. And, I mean, for those people who don't know, Richard Donner is the guy who, he's probably most famous for directing Superman the movie and half of Superman 2, I don't know. But he's also made a ton of other movies. He's goes back to TV. I mean, for Star Trek people, you may know him as the director of the Twilight Zone episode where William Shatner sees the monster on the wing of the plane. He directed that. So he goes way back, and he's a very skilled director. And yeah, because of that, I knew that, yes, I need to see The Omen. But at the same time, there's this thing with like these types of movies, like horror movies which involve the devil or exorcisms or any of this stuff, where I can't stand them for the most part. Because as far as horror is concerned, I don't find anything about this to be scary. It's like, you know, there's nothing more boring to me than an exorcism movie where it's literally like, this person is possessed, so I'm going to chant at this person and throw water on this person until all of a sudden, whenever it's dramatically feasible, the filmmakers decide that you won or you lost. I mean, it's the same problem that I have with Harry Potter movies. It's like all of this is sort of based in this kind of like weird like mysticism, and it's supposed to be terrifying that your son is the devil and all this stuff. But like at the same time, it's like there's no basis in reality, and because of that, like, I cannot be scared. I cannot be scared by the devil. I cannot be scared by something that doesn't exist, you know? So it's like, to me, like, a horror movie which is going to terrify me is something like, you know, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, where it's like, these are two normal guys who are just running around killing people. And also, by the way, on the same city streets that I tend to travel on a, you know, daily basis. So that's freaking terrifying. But when you say, like, my kid is the devil, I'm just like, I don't even know what that means. You know?
And I hear where you're coming from, and I guess I just come from a different viewpoint. I was raised Catholic.
So was I. Yeah. But anyway, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but I guess I don't know. Like, yeah, I was raised Catholic. I'm no longer Catholic. I have no religion. But still, like these stories that go around, like these ghost stories, stories of exorcisms, I think they influence me in terms of how I see films like this. Like, even though I don't believe that this is based in any reality, you know, I think it's still, I wouldn't say it's still scary to me. I think it's interesting. I think it's still, the horror elements still stand for me. So I dig stuff like this. I dig stuff like Rosemary's Baby, or even like something more recent, Deliver Us From Evil, that Eric Bana exorcism movie. I dug that a lot. So yeah, like stories like that, stories like this, I still Yeah, like I said, I don't believe in them, but I still find them interesting, and I still get just a sense of horror in them.
Well, I mean, okay, that's the thing is, and I like I'm sounding really negative about this movie, but there is a I guess a second part to my review here, which is, you know, like I, the reason why I bring that up is because a movie like this has basically, in my mind, two strikes against it, right, already. But that doesn't mean that it can't be a good movie. Like Rosemary's Baby, which you bring up, I think that that's an amazing movie. And I think one of the things that I love about it is the horror to me really comes not so much from the fact that she has like the devil's child inside of her, but the fact that like everyone around her is just treating this as just a normal everyday occurrence. And she's desperately crying for help, and no one around her is giving her the help that she needs. You know, I think that might be what I find to be scary about Rosemary's Baby. But with this one, I mean, it very much has that sort of vibe to it. And like the thing that I went into it, I started watching it, and I'm just like, I'm not so sure about this. And then there's the first kill, I guess you could say. And there's just that moment where, I mean, spoilers, I guess, but the little kid's nanny, the little kid's only like 4 or 5 years old, and his nanny and him share a bit of a moment, and there's like a dog off to the side, and they share a bit of a moment, and it's during like a backyard, you know, sort of like party, birthday party or whatever, and then you see the nanny up on the top of the house. And she's like, "Damien, I'm doing it all for you," with a big smile on her face and a noose around her neck, and then she jumps off the building and kills herself. And it's like, and then the music and everything and just everything surrounding it, and maybe taking that, like juxtaposing that, you know, sort of very suburban setting of like a birthday party with this, you know, horrific image. Like it really did creep me the hell out, you know? I mean, like I wasn't, I would say, scared about it, but I was definitely unsettled by it, you know?
Yeah, that's a great word, unsettled by it. Yeah, because I always forget that it happens like 14 minutes into the movie. Like things are just going along, and then that happens. And yeah, I again, I was taken aback by, oh shit, this is, you know, some stuff is going down already.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, it does occur 14 minutes into the movie is also kind of like a big thing for me, because these movies tend to be sort of glacial in their setup, you
Right.
know? And it's like, I know, because I know the name of this movie and I saw the trailer, I know what's coming, and I don't need to discover this stuff in real time with the characters. You know, it makes for like a boring first act, generally speaking. So I like the fact that this movie really sort of hits the ground running, you know. But and you know, a big part of that, you know, is the music. Like in that scene, just the music is so, again, kind of like off-putting, and uses sort of like chords and stuff like that, which are kind of grating. And it really does, you know, blend with the visuals really well, and has like sort of a really strong impact in terms of the overall effect. So yeah, I mean, and I think that they're able to sort of maintain that, and I think that the story that they're telling is interesting enough that it's cool. You know, the mythology that they're building is cool and everything like that. I really sort of like the idea of applying this kind of like ancient concept of the devil to a very modern world, and seeing how, you know, how would the devil act in modern day society? What form would he take, and how would he, you know, manipulate the world in order to gain control of it? And I think that it's really interesting how they play with that in this movie. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely a horror movie, but even though it doesn't scare me, I think it's really effective in terms of telling its story and getting its point across, and it's really interesting. I liked it a lot.
Oh, great. Yeah, and I was also reminded about how it is, yeah, there are horror elements, but it turns into more of a thriller towards the end of our leads investigating exactly what happened with Damien's birth and just like the evil forces behind him. I enjoyed that aspect of it a lot more, I think, this time. The conspiracy thriller aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. Let's talk about the music some more, because, I mean, that's why we're here, I guess. Jerry Goldsmith won the Oscar for this, which is, to me, surprising that, you know, a movie like this, I mean, and I understand that things were different back then, where you had things like The Exorcist. I mean, wasn't The Exorcist nominated for Best Picture? Yeah. I mean, it's like, it seems like, I mean, whenever you look at those nominees and winners from, like, the 70s, it's like, what was going on? I mean, what has changed? Because while I see, like, the appreciation for horror and you know, action and all that stuff in modern-day film criticism, things like the Talk Film Society and the people who, you know, sort of associate with that, you don't see it in the Academy, you know? And you did back then. And that's so weird to me. I'm wondering what has changed. I don't know what it is. If people are just getting older or what, but it's strange to me. But it's cool. And The Omen, winner of Best Original Score. Now, what did you think about the score in this?
First note I wrote was iconic. It is one of those scores that this and the images from the movie that go along with it have been parodied, have been homaged through years and years. Like, even Family Guy does it now and then. I mean, it's like the chanting, those chords, like the music is iconic through and through. And the opening title music definitely gets you into the mood. The Fox fanfare's not there. You see the Fox logo, it's silent. Then all of a sudden Jerry Goldsmith's music starts, and yeah, the mood is already set. So you're already in for a horrific ride in terms of mood and music. So yeah, I definitely love this score. Definitely unsettling.
Yeah, it has that sort of like, you know, I mean, because you've got like the chorus in there, and it's sort of like evoking, you know, sort of like some sort of like evil church music kind of thing going on. But then like underneath it too, which I think is really kind of key, is you've got a more typical like horror score as sort of like the bass, you know. I mean, like if you were to take out the chanting, it would sound like something from like Tales from the Crypt or something like that. And I think like pairing those two things together is really effective. And yeah, I mean, it definitely does set the tone right away, and it's, you know, it's catchy too. Like I can see, like, you know, listening to this in the shower or whatever, you know, whereas like some music, it's just like in movies, it's just this kind of like mood music that you can't really listen to outside of the movie. Like this you can. And I mean, that was something that we were kind of talking about in last week's episode when we were looking at Goldsmith's work in Star Trek, and like Star Trek, the motion picture. I mean, you don't even need to see the movie in order to appreciate that music. You can put that on, and that's just a great classical music album. And I think that there's a lot of that going on in this movie, too. But it has those unsettling cues and stuff that kind of, you know, mash well with the visuals, and it is extremely effective. I usually don't notice music in movies unless I'm looking for it. And here I definitely noticed it in a good way, you know, because it helped with the impact of the overall film. The other thing that it did, which I thought was kind of nice, is, you know, one of the things that I like, as much as I like Goldsmith's like big themes and stuff like that, I like his sort of like ambient mood music, which you hear in a lot of the sort of like smaller scenes. There's a lot of that going on in Alien, and there's a lot of it going on here too. When they're in their sort of like good time sequence during those first 14 minutes before the woman jumps off the building, it really is kind of like very domestic, and they're a happy family. And the music underneath that, I think, is really good and very Goldsmith. Like, I kept on listening to it thinking, like, this sounds like Alien, like the beginning of Alien, you know, back when it is good times and stuff. And I liked that, too. It's very Goldsmith and yet unlike anything else that I've heard him do. So, yeah, it's cool. So, where do you place this? I mean, are you a Goldsmith fan in general?
I definitely need to get into his work more. This morning when I looked through his filmography, I noticed films that he did that I either forgot he did or just didn't know he did. Like, a lot, he did, according to IMDb, like 251 scores. So, yeah, looking through it, he's done a lot of great scores for movies I love. And yeah, and I think overall, like, I'm a fan without knowing how much work he actually put into all his films. So, yeah. And how could I forget Alien? I mean, that's one of my favorite films of all time. Definitely one of my favorite scores of all time. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we can talk about that in a minute. But what, as far as, you know, I mean, looking at the list and everything like that, and just sort of, I'm not, you know, asking you to, you know, where does it fit in the 251 necessarily or whatever, but, like, how do you think that the Omen score stacks up with the other stuff that you're familiar with?
I think it's pretty high. I think this and Alien are probably either his most iconic scores or, like, his best scores that I've heard, but they're, I think, both of my favorites, I think, at this point. Again, I have to look through his entire filmography, but just at first glance, it's up there. Because just, like I said, it is, it invokes a mood right away. That chanting is iconic. And yeah, it works outside the film, like you said. So I think it's definitely up there as one of his best.
Yeah, I agree that it is definitely up there. I mean, he's done so many which are so good that, you know, I can't say that it's at the top of the list at all. But it's definitely extremely solid and, you know, better than most, I mean, I guess. I mean, it's certainly better than most scores in general. I mean, the thing, I guess, that we have to think about with Jerry Goldsmith, at least in my opinion, is, like, he is one of the absolute best composers of all time. I mean, to me, there's, like, John Bryan is number one, which I know is weird. And then there's, you know, John Williams, and then Jerry Goldsmith. And there's times where Jerry Goldsmith's work is better than John Williams's. You know, there are times, like I said this on the last episode, but, like, there are times where, like, I'm listening to the score for Star Trek the Motion Picture, and I'm like, yeah, this is better than Star Wars. Yeah. You know, and I think that's not true, but there are times where I think it's true. And, yeah, but this one is certainly, you know, high on my list of Goldsmith scores, which makes it very high on my list of scores in general. So let's take a look now at, you know, just some of the other movies which he's done. Do sort of like a lightning round of Jerry Goldsmith scores. So for you, like, what's one of your all time favorites? Well, I guess to start, you know, because you brought it up and I've brought it up, and it's my favorite Goldsmith score, and it sounds like it's one of yours too. Alien.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's another film where it starts off with these opening credits, and the score comes in, the opening theme, and it just evokes a mood. And that's Alien to me. Like, it manages to capture the mood of Alien the film within, like, the first 1 minute of screen time, and that's thanks to his score. And yeah, and going on from then, just like the moments when the film builds and the score is just, it's not like, I wouldn't say it's like in your face, but it, again, it sets the mood, and it has to be my favorites of his. Now that I look through like his entire filmography, because, like I said, Alien is one of my favorite films of all time, and that's partly because the mood it invokes and the score.
Yeah, Alien is one of my favorite films of all time, too, and this is one of my favorite scores. And like you're saying, I mean, just the way that the score sort of evokes the general tone of the movie is so perfect. It starts off with, like, the opening credit sequence, which is kind of, you know, ominous. But then as you get into the ship and they're waking up and everything is just kind of, you know, going on, and they're setting the stage with all this stuff, it presents this kind of, like, peace and serenity that really kind of relaxes you, you know, and almost takes you off guard as you're about to watch this, you know, really, really intense horror movie. And that, to me, is a big part of it, is a big part of the reason why the movie works, is because it does really put you at ease and makes everything very calm and natural and just everyday. And then when it gets into the horror stuff, it just ramps up really fast, and you're just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, for like the rest of the movie until like the very end. And, you know, spoilers, when, you know, the problem is taken care of and, you know, we're left with the hero safe and sound, there is not much movie left after that. Like, basically no movie left after that. But as soon as that happens, you know, let's say it ends with a giant kind of explosion, and then the way that the music in particular helps to kind of take you down off of that high is very significant. Like, that is the one movie, I think, more than any other movie, where I always watch through the credits. And the reason is because the music in the end credits does such a good job of kind of relaxing you after you've been through this extremely intense experience. And you kind of need that in order to come down from that high, and it almost completes the experience for me. Right. Like, if that calm music wasn't there over the end credits, then I don't think I would enjoy the movie nearly as much as I do. And I also love how the end credits, unlike most movies, and I know the end credits are much shorter, but they're not like sort of like a greatest hits of what we just heard. It's appropriate to the place where you're at this point in time, you know, which I think is really great. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that score. Yeah. And like you said, I mean, yeah, it is a breather after what just happened. And yeah, it invokes those opening moments of the beginning of the film. Like when you see them sleeping and waking up, you know, it just came to me, like, it's almost like when she's asleep is when it's the most calm. when she's awake, she's in this world where it's just, it's hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. A monster running around. So yeah, you as an audience and our lead are most at peace when our lead is asleep and when things are calm. And yeah, the music just takes you there.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I know, like, part of me, I'm always, like, anytime that I say that, like, that's my favorite of his scores, I'm always kind of like, I don't know if I can really say that, because I know that there was a lot of stuff in there which was pieced together from different things. I think there might be some, you know, straight-up traditional classical music which is used. And I know that, like, I think it's when they're waking up, like, that music, there was, like, a whole big thing because, like, when they were temp scoring the movie, like, Ridley Scott was using a piece of music that Goldsmith had written for Freud, like, 20 years earlier or 16 years earlier or something like that. And then Goldsmith wrote a piece specifically for that scene, and Scott was like, I like the thing you did for Freud better. I'm just going to use that instead. And apparently Goldsmith was not exactly happy about that particular development, but, you know, which is understandable. But it's still Goldsmith, you know, and I mean, I guess, I don't know. I mean, where do you separate that? I don't know, but it's, whatever it is, it works. You know, the music in that movie is great. It's not necessarily as listenable as, say, the score from Star Trek, the motion picture, but it is very appropriate to the movie. Right. So what else do you got? What are some of your other favorites, or what's one of your other favorites?
Yeah, one of my favorites. looking through, you know, I think I've said iconic a few too many times. You know how I think The Omen is iconic, and Alien. That score is iconic, but not so iconic. But definitely one of my favorites is his score for Air Force One.
Yeah. No, I thought about that too.
Yeah. Again, I think in the beginning of the film, there are these flourishes of, I think, horns, and it invokes America.
Yes.
and it is spot on for the mood of the film. And yeah, it is a blast in terms of action, in terms of an action film score. when it gets going and towards the end and the climax, the music builds and builds. And yeah, it is. Yeah, like I said, perfect action film soundtrack, and yeah, it invokes America in loving ways without straight out playing the Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah, no, I do love the score for Air Force One. I think it's great. I love that movie so much. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. It's you know, it's Die Hard on Air Force One, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's great. I mean, what more could you look for in a movie? And Gary Oldman in that movie is so awesome. Oh, I love that movie so much. But the score is definitely, you know, right on point with that for sure. You know, one of my favorites is going back pretty far in his career, Chinatown.
Oh, yeah.
There's another one where it just, as far as like mood is concerned, it completely captures sort of what they're going for with that movie and this sort of like depressing state of the world, really, as captured in this tiny story. And I mean, that to me is like what this whole story is about, really. It's like one of the things that I love about it is it's a very small story. It starts off with just like a case of this, you know, guy who may be cheating on his wife, and it blows up to something which encompasses the entire city of Los Angeles. And I mean, that's what film noir kind of does really well. And, you know, this movie does it better than almost any other. But the music stays small the whole time. The music, you know, it never leaves sort of like that room, you know, where these two characters are having this conversation. And it's just this theme which runs through it, where it's just very sort of melancholy, I guess, you know. It's beautiful, and it invokes this sort of like feeling of, you know, lost love or love that could never be. And just sadness, you know, sadness of like, I see something right over there and I can almost reach it. And it's, I just can't quite get there. And I know that I never will. And, you know, I just kind of have to live with that. Like that's the mood that music creates. And I think it's beautiful. Okay, well, what about you? You got any others?
Yeah, I just pulled another one that I, you know, this happens to me from time to time. I look through like my favorite composers, and I just tend to forget some films they do. Like I just scrolled through his filmography, and I saw Planet of the Apes, the original Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my god, because I recently, fairly recently, rewatched the original Planet of the Apes films, and after seeing the original one, the 1968, that's a film that continues to blow me away. It's slowly becoming one of my favorites ever. And I remember distinctly during that rewatch just loving the soundtrack and how it invokes this this animalistic feel, especially when like the apes come on screen and Heston has to basically comes face to face with these new beings. But yeah, the score invokes that feeling so well, and him playing in the sci-fi realm too is fantastic. So yeah, Planet of the Apes, his score in that film, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and it's very different from like a lot of the ones that we mentioned. I'd say if it's similar to any of these, the most similar it is to is The Omen, because it has that sort of like weird, yeah. It's almost about like weird sounds. It's not like your typical sort of like, you know, Star Wars type of orchestral beauty. It's more playing with weird sounding things in order to evoke this sense of the alien, you know?
Yeah, it's otherworldly, which is perfect for for a film but called Planet of the Apes.
It's really good. It's really good for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, before we wrap this up, I should note that there were a couple of key collaborators on The Omen who had worked in Star Trek or who would go on to work on Star Trek. And it's just kind of noteworthy for a couple of reasons. One is David Warner.
Oh, he's fantastic in this movie.
he's awesome in everything. Yeah. But yeah, I love his character in this. And it's... He does have one of the best death scenes.
Yes, it still shocked me. Oh god, I knew it was coming, but it still surprises me. Oh man,
yeah, it's great. It's great. And the other one, which I think is really interesting, is Stuart Baird, who was the editor on this movie. He was Richard Donner's editor, I think, for a long time. You know, he cut Superman and all this stuff. And looking at Stuart Baird. I went on to direct Star Trek Nemesis, the last of the Next Generation movies, very sort of infamously to a lot of people. A lot of fans see Stuart Baird as public enemy number one, and they think of him as a terrible director instead of thinking of him as an amazing editor. But he is an amazing editor. I mean, you look at his filmography, and it's just like, oh my god, you know? I mean, he edited everything from The Omen and Superman all the way up through Skyfall, you know, and Casino Royale. And it's just like, wow, this guy, he's great. He's truly one of the best editors in history. And it's interesting to me because I saw that and I'm like, oh, that's cool, because like here Jerry Goldsmith's doing the music and Stuart Baird's editing it. And then, you know, since Goldsmith did the music for, like, a bunch of Star Trek movies, he ended up doing the music for Nemesis, which Baird directed. And then I started looking at Goldsmith's filmography, and I'm like, oh, look at that. Goldsmith has actually scored all of Stuart Baird's movies. Oh, so wow. I guess, you know, they knew each other from back in the day or whatever, you know, and they had a relationship, and they worked well together. They probably worked pretty closely together, since I'm assuming... You know, I mean, both editing and music are like post-production processes. They probably worked together a lot on movies like The Omen, so they probably had a good relationship. And then, you know, Baird gets Star Trek, and Goldsmith's already there, and they just kind of meet, and it's all perfect and great, and Nemesis, it ends up being a great movie. Have you seen Star Trek Nemesis?
Not yet, I don't think. I can't remember which one. I saw, I think, First Contact. I think that's the only Next Generation Star Trek film I've seen.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I have them on Blu-ray, and I could watch them anytime I want, but for some reason, I have not seen them. I think the answer as to why I'm not, you know, chomping at the bit to see them is because I was never a Next Generation guy, and that's like an entirely different conversation, I know, but I'll get to them eventually.
Yeah, we'll have to have you on to talk about that at some point. Watch Generations, because, you know, it's the end of Captain Kirk. I love Generations for completely irrational reasons. First Contact, the one that you saw, is definitely considered to be the best. Insurrection is very small and kind of like just an episode, and it's very insignificant in my opinion. And Nemesis is the end. It's the end of Next Gen, and a lot of people don't like how it ended. So there you go. It's weird. Well, looking at it historically, it's weird just because you're like, how did this go wrong? Screenplay by John Logan, starring Tom Hardy in, for all intents and purposes, his first role in a major motion picture. And, you know, big budget script and everything. I mean, Jerry Goldsmith music and you know, Jeffrey Kimball shot it and all this stuff. And the end result is interesting, to say the least. But, yeah. But Baird's work in The Omen is great. You know, the editing in that movie is fantastic. So,
and going back to the way David Warner is killed, yeah, that the editing is in that is tremendous, because he goes to multiple takes. I mean, yeah, multiple camera angles, and shows it over and over in the most sickly beautiful way you could show that type of death. So yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty great. Yes. So, okay. Well, I guess that's pretty much it. Any final thoughts on The Omen or Jerry Goldsmith?
Love them both. Yeah, this is fast becoming one of my favorite horror movies. I think it's up there in the ranks for me of like Rosemary's Baby, in terms of like the horror it evokes and just the mood it brings. And yeah, this is another iconic Goldsmith score. And yeah, it's definitely up there for me. So yeah, I'm glad I saw this again. And yeah, I'm glad I had a chance to talk to you about it.
Yeah, I enjoyed The Omen quite a bit too. You know, having not seen it, it was. I would say kind of a pleasant surprise for me, you know, since I don't tend to like these movies, but I shouldn't have been surprised that it was good. I think I knew that it was going to be good. I just was afraid of it being bad, but but I thought it was very good, and I thought that Goldsmith's score was very good as well, and I think on the whole, you know, Goldsmith is one of the best ever. So yeah, that's that. Well, it's been fun talking about The Omen today, but that's not the only thing we're talking about this week on Trek FM, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Well, it's very small and intimate, and you get to see, you know, a lot of people whose work you've come to admire or whatever, and I mean, that's what's kind of cool about it, the fact that it's in a hotel. It's at the Rio, and, you know, everyone is staying there.
Earl Grey.
Yeah, really, she's following the Hasbrat, I think, is really what it is.
Come for the revolution, stay for the Hasbrat.
It's got to be fresh Hasbrat. None of that replicated stuff.
Like, Daniel's, like, at the watching the end of this episode, like, tears are coming down the face. It's like, oh, it's the Hasbrat. It's so spicy. It's what it is.
The Orb.
Also, the original title of this episode was A Matter of Breeding, which, when we talk about things feeling TNG-ish, that could have been a Riker episode.
The Ready Room.
It's about people and feelings and emotions. It's about philosophy. It's about the future. It's about hope. It's about glory. It's about intellectual promise. That's what Axanar is about. It is not a story about pew, pew, pew. I promise you that.
To the journey! I do have one honorable mention.
Name it.
Pax!
Oh, how could we not have a top five season five moments without Prax?
Warp 5.
It kind of like is akin to when fans saw the Galaxy class in The Next Generation for the very first time, and you had basically a crew and civilian complement of, what, over 1,000 people? About 2/3 of that complement were civilians and their families. So you actually did have teachers and scholars and scientists and their extended families on board.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
One of the things that amazes me about the score for Star Trek The Motion Picture is that he only had 50% of the movie available to him when he scored. So he was scoring an awful lot to scene missing, scene missing.
The 602 Club.
Where did he get the cloak from on the other planet? I really, really, really want to know. He shows up with the cloak.
He kind of fashioned it out of a rudimentary lathe.
Literary Treks.
It's a small point, but I thought it was really interesting to have here in the book, because, again, that's what Star Trek Deep Space Nine has really always done for Star Trek, which is kind of make faith okay in the Star Trek universe and show how it's valid. And so I thought that was a really nice, in it, again, it's a tiny point in the book, but I thought it was pretty powerful, at least for me, who is somebody who is a faith. So
Axanar. the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969 that had its moment, it had its time, and there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Keiko could totally beat the crap out of Rumpelstiltskin. This is so, like, I cannot buy this at all. That she's just sitting there being like, oh, my baby.
At the very least, she could throw a plant at him or something. Because we established in TNG that pot foo is a thing.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the shows as they search iTunes. I always say that, you know, because it's here in the copy, but, you know, I mean, I guess it is really true. And I mean, I guess you know this too as a right. as a podcaster. Like, apparently, like, leaving a review on iTunes is like a really big deal.
And, exactly.
And so please do us a favor.
Yeah, it's something about Apple's formula. Like, if you write a review, your podcast rises in search results, something like that. So yeah, it's important.
Yeah. So please leave a review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way that you can help keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. We do have an email this week, some feedback about last week's episode on Jerry Goldsmith from our old friend Crazy Man. He says, "Loving the Jerry Goldsmith talk. His score for the motion picture alone makes that the greatest of all Trek movies." Okay, let's not get overboard here, Crazy Man. It's a great score, but please. "The only thing I dislike is that they use the Enterprise music in San Francisco, which ruins the reveal when it is played when we first see Enterprise. I think it's a director's cut edition, but I could be wrong." I don't think it is a director's cut edition. I think that they had that in the original cut, if I'm not mistaken. "My favorite scores of his outside Star Trek are Patton and Rambo First Blood Part 2, which I often hum to myself in appropriate circumstances. Cheers, Crazy Man." I you know, I've never seen Patton. I don't know. Have you?
Yeah, I haven't either, which is unfortunate. No.
It's from the director of Planet of the Apes.
Oh yeah, I know. It's one that I've been meaning to watch for years and years, but I just haven't had the, you know, I should be watching Patton right now.
Yeah, me too, right? I mean, didn't, like, Francis Ford Coppola write that and stuff? I mean,
yeah.
And Rambo First Blood Part 2,
Rambo, because I think he scored the first Rambo as well. That was close to being a favorite I was going to talk about, because the scores through those films are again similar to Air Force One, sort of invoke America and paint this especially Part Two paints the film as patriotic. Maybe a tad bit too much, but the score definitely helps.
Yeah, and you know that Rambo First Blood Part Two, that was written by James Cameron.
That's right.
One of the writers on there. I'm not a big fan of that movie, but you know, what can you do? I don't know. Rambo movies don't work for me, I'm sorry.
It's only the first and the most recent one that I really like. That's it.
Yeah. If you want to contact us, if you want to give us a review, there's a number of ways that you can do that, like Crazy Man. You can fill out the form on trek.fm/contact, or you can leave us a voicemail. Just look on the sidebar of the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. You can find us on Twitter @trekfm. Or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, where you'll also find the Babel Conference, which is our user forum, our listener forum. Just go to the Babel Conference. Just type that into the search field on Facebook. That's B-A-B-E-L. And, yeah, you'll find us there. Marcelo, where can people find you on the internet?
On Twitter, Talk Film Society, at Talk Film Soc. That's Talk Film S-O-C. Follow us there. You'll find the podcast there. Go to talkfilmsociety.com. You'll find the podcast there as well. Sorry. And also, just follow me on Twitter, at Marcelo J. Pico, if you want to hear me talk about movies. Maybe a bit too much. There you go.
Nah, you can never talk too much about movies. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and definitely check out Talk Film Society. It is great. And yeah, like I always say, you always, whenever I'm on the show, you always make it sound like I know what I'm talking about, which is rare. So I appreciate that.
Now, and I'll say I've heard feedback saying you're one of their favorite guests on the show because, yeah, I mean, editing helps a bit, but no, you know a lot, and I'm grateful every time you're on because it's always an interesting chat.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah. I really enjoy it quite a bit. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, or you can also find me right here on Trek FM doing Standard Orbit, or you can find me on my website, commentarytrackstars.com, where I do commentary track stars off topic and commentary track star babies. And you can also find the show on Twitter at ComTrackStars, or you can email us, like Crazy Man did, at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring commentary, Trek Stars, and all of our shows to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. I have a book this week, which we didn't talk about, but it's another book which was based on, I'm sorry, another book which was the basis for a movie which had a Jerry Goldsmith score, which is one of my favorites, and that's L.A. Confidential. Have you seen L.A. Confidential?
I have not seen L.A. Confidential.
Oh, my God, you have to see L.A. Confidential.
I know.
Here's the description of the book, which was written by James Ellroy. It's narrated by Craig Wasson. It's 17 hours and 35 minutes long, unabridged. Six prisoners are beaten senseless in their cells by cops crazed on alcohol. For the three LAPD detectives involved, it will expose the guilty secrets on which they have built their corrupt and violent careers. I haven't read the book. I want to read the book, but the movie is so good. I mean, like, if you want, like, a great noir movie, it's awesome. And, like, what we were talking about with Chinatown, like, this does that, like, a million times over, you know? It's awesome. I mean, you'll just sit there, and it's as it's unfolding, you're just like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And then, like, it's this very sort of, like, cool puzzle with all of these pieces which are being put together. And then it gets to the end, and it ends with one of the best gunfights in movie history. It's just like, oh, my God. And, like, everyone got their start in this. Russell Crowe, what's his name? The other Australian dude.
I think I know who you're talking about. Guy Pearce?
Yes, no? Guy Pearce. Guy Pearce is in it. Kim Basinger, she won her Oscar for this. You know, Star Trek alum James Cromwell is really great. It's even got Arvin Sloan in it. He's awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely check out L.A. Confidential and get the book for free on Audible since you listen to Trek FM. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Commentary, Trek Stars, and the network. Well, thanks again for stepping up, Marcelo, and filling in for John and Max and letting me get this thing done. It was great, you know, and great to have you on with a new, fresh perspective on The Omen and Jerry Goldsmith.
And thanks for having me once again. Yeah, I just hope I didn't come off as a terrible person for not having seen LA Confidential and Patton.
No, that's okay. It happens, you know. I mean, I haven't seen Patton, so I guess I'm half terrible too in that case. But no. Just watch it. All right. And we will be back next week to begin our new series on Star Trek creator Michael Piller.